Put out one Instagram story and I asked who would be interested in doing it. I don't want to get like a bunch of people saying, yo, I don't want to go ham on marketing and get a bunch of people and then not be able to
validate an idea before you execute
an appropriate product. Exactly. I'm almost sort of testing it out. Mm-hmm. So I tested it out with my existing clients and then I put out this little story. I think it was like 2-3 stories. From that, I got 3 new clients. Nice. And now I'm trying to, solidify it with them. When I feel like that's stable, I'm going to, put out more marketing, post-marketing my services. But it's been a challenging learning curve. But I think this is ultimately somewhere where I want to be in the future, because PTing one-on-one is very time-consuming and it's not very scalable.
No.
So I think this is a step forward. It's a blessing in disguise, maybe.
Some of like the most interesting like PTs I've seen are ones who kind of adopted to the idea of going digital like well before the coronavirus, with their like online coaching and like PDFs and workouts they sell. But I do think I'd love to hear your thoughts. It's difficult, especially when you go online, because part of the relationship between a PT and a client is that personal to some degree relationship, where like you have the emotional intelligence to be able to relate to them. You have some kind of like camaraderie, some kind of friendship, some rapport building. And I think it's very difficult to transition that on the online platform. And I think that's where maybe it may get lost. So it's quite a difficult task, but I think it's achievable.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I'm struggling to maintain that balance, training is very personal, very personal. I've had several clients that, break down mid-session because of things that are happening at work, break down in tears.
Mm-hmm.
Things are happening in work, things are happening in relationships, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like when we share these moments together and go past them, those are actually, they turn out to be, turning points or little boosts that they have in their training.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very hard to match that on a digital platform. Audio is still good.
Yeah, so I think I've seen it happen in like 2 different ways. We have people doing like Zoom calls. my internet's gone shit.
Yeah.
So Zoom calls with their clients, which I think is very interesting. Again, it's still that one-on-one basis. Another I've seen is like Instagram Live, where the PT will just Instagram Live themselves and they do like a nice home workout with some of the essential workout material that every person probably should have in their property. And that seems to be going quite well. Again, it's that level of like, how do I be as personable online as possible and still keep that human connection? I think it's possible. And listen, I'd love to, if you have any workouts, send them my way. I'll give them a try. Right now, I'm doing some kind of prison jail workout where it's just tricep, shoulders, and arms, and abs, and some glute exercises.
Prison workout, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Nice, bro.
Especially now, I realize that
there's so many resources online right now. That's one thing that I'm noticing. Like, everyone's just throwing shit out left, right, center.
Misinformation.
You mentioned this at the start. It's arguably an oversaturated market.
Mm-hmm.
For people who are trying to break into the industry, I think it's very difficult. I'm one of those people. So I have to find my own way of doing it. But for people that are benefiting from this industry, or people that are trying to, use the industry services, I think this is like a golden age for them.
It's perfect. Listen, you go on Instagram, you slide up once, you're going to see 4 different home workout videos. You'll see 4 or 3 different like Facebook ads running on home workouts. And all of them look a bit shit, to be transparent. They don't really like you look at them, you think like,
one.
And I saw something crazy yesterday. Please educate me on this. I saw a woman with a Coke bottle doing tricep kickbacks. And not a 1.5 liter Coke bottle, no, a 500 milliliter one. And I go to Instagram account, bro, she has like 4.8 million and like 120K on Instagram Live watching her do this ridiculous stuff. And I was like, wow.
Man, I'm telling you, it's crazy. I've seen people use frying pans and pots. Doing kettlebell swings with frying pans.
I literally saw an ad for that today.
Man, it is wild. or like cans of beans, you know. Now I don't know what to. I think so. I understand kind of both sides, you know. I look at it from a trainer's perspective, and then I look at it from just a regular person or someone who's you know aspiring to, or you know to train hard, look better. So from the trainer's perspective, they're using all this weird shit, like, you know, shoulder flies or lateral raises with Coke bottles or kettlebell swings with frying pans. Sure. Because we as trainers have to, especially at this time, more so than ever, be as positive as hell. You know, we need mm-hmm. to, if we're putting out the message that, you know, oh, everything's gone to hell, you're going to lose all your gains, no more gym, that means, you know, you shouldn't even train anymore. Who the hell is going to buy our services?
Good point.
You know, we need to be very positive in the way that we spread the message. Then where it gets lost, so this is from the non-trainer's view, is, you know, am I really going to pick up my mom's fucking cooking pans and do kettlebell swings with them? You know, is that something am I going to be sweating on these pans? Am I going to actually... Is this something that I'm going to do for like a month or two? No, you know? So I think as trainers, we can't sell dreams. Mm. And as clients, we need to be more realistic in what we can or cannot achieve.
So it's difficult. I would say part and parcel of fitness, especially when you look at it from a more commercial point of view, outside of like dealing with athletes, it is part of that dream selling, to be transparent. It's the dream selling that you listen to me as a PT, you follow my nutritional guide, you follow my workout plans, and you will achieve this body in 8 to 12 weeks. So I don't think you can separate it from the dream being sold, because that's what really entices people. Initially, that's the first way by which you get them to be interested in the product or the service that you offer, is with that what could happen if, that if moment.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen all my sources, yeah, PTs I follow on Instagram. You're like, so I only really care about S&C. Everything else doesn't really bother me. And you look and it's like, oh, wow, this coach is coaching this guy, and this guy's doing 5x5. He's maxing out 240 on a squat. Like, shit, that's awesome. All right, I'm going to give him a follow. All right, yeah, this guy's greatest person, some good stuff. All right, what's the bench press for? Wow, shit, I need that. And again, that's the dream. That's the what if. That's if. What if I partnered with this PT? What results, what gains could I get? In most cases with the S&C, it's hard to hide it. The numbers will increase, like, and it's very, 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 it can be measured quite easily. With everything else in terms of like the physique and fitness as a whole, pictures being tailored, you know, different lighting, different outfits, it's all smoking mirrors. It's a lot of like theatrics. And I think that, you know, where some of the accounts I've seen like grow have just been 100% authentic about, like, yo, here's what I look like when I'm not posing. Here's what I look like when I'm posing. Here's what I look like in the morning. I'm super bloated. Here's what I look like after a workout. See that picture of me where I look super like shredded. That's post-workout where I've got a pump. Here's me like most days. And I think that level of transparency, the authenticity, is like what many people, you know, will be drawn and catered towards. And I think that it'd be great to just see more PTs kind of flock towards that, rather than just selling people the dream of, like, you know, the big bombs and the six pack and the 24-inch biceps.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's
definitely
possible.
Man.
Probably people with 24.
No, definitely. I do see like there is a distinction, like you said, between the authentic guys and then the ones that are just trying to upload the sexiest looking images for Instagram. I think you have to find your own thing, because I can't even explain this. I feel as though some people wanting to edit their pictures and put the best looking pictures on there, on the digital world, it's actually them trying to be authentic. So how do I explain this? So, you know, Kim Kardashian, Kylie Kardashian, they're trying to put up pictures. Every single person out there knows that these pictures are edited as fuck, you know what I mean? That sure. Only the best of the best is going to be put up there. But everyone knows that is their true self, you know? They, I would assume so, actually, that, you know, that's who they are. They like putting up pictures where they look really good in. So there's PTs that are, I take it this way, as in some PTs are like that as well. They want to only put up stuff that looks really good because that's who they are. They want to show off the best version of themselves. Whereas some others, their authentic self is, I don't give a rat's ass about how I look. I'm going to let people know that I don't give a shit. I don't know. That's my way of looking at it. I obviously gravitate more towards the, I don't care how I look in this photo versus this photo. I would gravitate more towards that as well as a client, but I am biased. Mm. I don't have the best physique in the world as well. You know, I started off at a disadvantageous state. Like I said, I was obese. Didn't have that, you know, youth athleticism that, in my opinion at least, drives that building process towards, you know, those Zeus-like physiques. With that being said, I have a good physique, you know what I mean? But I'm not trying to show it off to the world because I know that there are much better out there. What I would like to show is where I came from and that change, because I think that's more so inspiring than just showing the end result.
Like, I'd love to like close this up with a few more questions. It's that, so where you are now, and you've outlined it, it's a 7-year journey to get to this point. Like, 7 years is a long time, as you can imagine. And I'd love to know how you managed to stay focused, disciplined on this journey to get to where we are now, which is not where we are, nowhere near the finish line.
I think this is my, like, I've just taken a few steps past the start line at this point, man. Mm. I'll be straight with you. How did I stay focused? So when I was in Canada doing my engineering, I think it was that aspect of, oh, I'm not allowed to go do this. You know, I'm not allowed to go do my sports degree or allowed to work in sports because I'm an engineer. So I'm going to focus on that more. It's just a bit of a frustration thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Plus the fact that I was still in that beginning phase. I think I had that, what we call it, you know, the initial stage of motivation for anyone looking that who's getting in shape. I think that helped a lot, those two factors. When I moved to London and I did my sports science degree, I'll be straight with you, I had already absorbed so much information off of the internet that my first year at university was a joke. You know, like, I remember being up there in biomechanics class. Our professor couldn't speak very, his English was very weak. So he would ask me to come up there and explain to everyone, because biomechanics was sports and mechanics, two things that I had very good experience with. You know, mechanics was something I did in engineering school for a long time. So it was that, you know, easy for me, to the point where my professor asked me to explain things, like almost run full classes by myself. So during that year where it wasn't any, it wasn't challenging, I think I did lose a bit of motivation. I was like, well, shit, is this really going to help me? And what I did subconsciously, what I think helped me, was joining the American football team, because that was a whole new challenge for me. You know, prior to that, I was just training to look good. Now I had to train to
perform
good as well.
I was just trying to get those abs. That's what I cared about, man.
Yeah, man. But then when we joined American football, I think staying healthy was a big challenge as well, because we just get rammed up every weekend, you know? So that challenge, I think, kept me very focused on continuing to learn more about training, nutrition, et cetera, et cetera. And finally was starting my, you know, alongside one of my colleagues, was starting the track and field academy. That one as well was another challenging venture that we took on. And, you know, it forced me. At one point, I remember we had 30 athletes. So, you know, if we didn't show up and if we weren't motivated, then we're losing everything that we built. So I think those, you know, setting myself up in positions where I had no choice other than to be focused was really the main driving point.
So let's say you are a 17, 18-year-old version of yourself. What advice would you give that version of yourself now, knowing what you know? after the arbitrary number of years of experience?
A lot of things, man.
Top three.
The main one was I wish, right, that I had this experience online. You know what I mean? Because I really do think this is a unique experience that a lot of people can take a lot from, you know, especially in the place where I live right now, a lot, and the culture in which I live in. A lot of kids go to university to go study things that they haven't thought about at all, you know. My culture does not, my culture being Arab culture, by the way, does not encourage kids coming out of high school to go, you know, go into the arts, for example, or go into sports or anything that isn't, you know, a white collar sort of industry, you know, unless you're an engineer, a lawyer, a doctor, or a businessman. You know, there's no respect almost being put on that. So I think if I had shown my journey, and a lot of people, you know, a lot of people could have taken some inspiration from that when they come to make decisions about, you know, what they want to study and what they want to go into. I'm not saying I'm the most successful guy. Shit, I haven't even started in my career. I've only been working full time for 6 months. But what I can say, though, is I'm very comfortable in the place that I'm in right now. And I'm very comfortable in knowing that, given based on my previous experiences, that I will do whatever it takes to get to where I want to be. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So that's a big thing, just documenting that online.
What is the most important lesson you've learned so far?
Then this might sound contradictory, that follow your passion.
Okay.
Following your passion is not meant to be fun. You know what I mean? It's not always fun. Sorry. Let me change that. It's not always fun. Following your passion takes a lot of guts. Number one, number two, a lot of risks and a lot of unspoken about time spent on doing shit that is not your passion. You know what I mean? So my passion was to, like, university, as much as I like sports, a lot of the times, you know, we had to do papers and sit for exams that I couldn't care less about, you know. They were on topics that I didn't really like. But, you know, I mean, I needed to get where I needed to get, so I have to do this thing. Again, now I'm facing it with online training. I hate sitting in front of a computer. You know what I mean? And typing things away. I hate it so much. But I know, and, you know, even editing. But I know if I need to get to that stage that I want to be in terms of my online presence, I need to spend X amount of hours a day editing videos, working on the training software, uploading shit to YouTube. You know what I mean? I don't like those things per se, but I know that I need to do them in order to continue enjoying what I do outside of that. You know what I mean? People think when you say follow your passion that it's all going to be butterflies and rainbows from there.
It can be for some, huh?
It can be.
I think if you, so one of the things that I've learned, one of the most important lessons is enjoying the journey, which it sounds like quite simple, but it's
huge.
Again, I was always so focused on like the end goal. So it's like you outline goals to achieve and you're tunnel visioned on achieving those and you get those and say, oh, great. All right. What's next? And then you realize, no, hitting these goals after a while doesn't make you feel any better. Right? In fact, you just get more frustrated because the goals become so much more loftier and like, oh, fuck, I didn't meet this. I got to work harder. And then you take a step back and you realize, I've just achieved relatively quite a lot if I look back in the last 18 or so months. But I didn't actually enjoy the journey to get into the stage. And you realize you're not really stopping to smell the roses. You're not really enjoying life as you live it. You're just so focused on that outcome. And being that outcome focused or goal orientated is like great in some capacities. But I also think life is to be lived. And I think for me personally, that awakening of realizing that, hey, I'm just going to enjoy it every day as it comes and still have that end goal, that the objective in sight. But again, just work every day and try and enjoy every day and break that end goal down into somewhat enjoyable or manageable tasks on a daily basis. So that when I do reach that end, that we do reach that penultimate stage, wherever that may be, I look back and I think like, wow, I really have enjoyed this journey. It's been great. It's been ups and downs, roller coasters. It's been butterflies and roses. It's been dog shit and catfish. But hey, we're here and I've had a great time.
Yeah, I see you. I see you. Fully agree with that as well. My question for you is, do you, like, with that outlook as well, do you feel as though you still have to face or do some mundane tasks? Now your attitude, you know, towards these tasks does that differ? That's my question. Your attitude towards these mundane tasks,
mm-hmm.
does that differ ever since you've made that realization or had that realization? Sorry.
Yes. Before I used to like hate them and do them like begrudgingly, but then it's like these tasks help me get to that goal. And I think Mike Tyson kind of outlined it quite beautifully. Like discipline is like doing what you hate, but doing it like you love it. That same like enthusiasm and approach. Now, maybe it may not be the same enthusiasm, but it's still going to be the same like focus to achieve that. So for example, like sending emails. Yo, bro, I hate emails. I hate typing. If you see me type, I only type with like one finger in each hand. It's like embarrassing. Like I need to work on my touch typing. That's probably something I'm going to work on whilst we're on like Corona lockdown. Meetings, I hate meetings. I think they're a waste of time, but I still have to do them. Social media, I actually like kind of dislike it quite a lot. So much nonsense. Yeah. Like again, it's one of those like, you know, it's less so in most cases the vehicle, the medium, and more so how it can be used. So I think everything is just really a change in mindset, really. Every book I'd recommend that kind of helped me on this journey, I read it about 16 to 18 months ago, was like Carol Dweck, Growth Mindset. And why I read it was I applied for like a VC role, which is venture capitalist, you know, if anybody doesn't know.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, they invest in like startups. And one of the reasons why I didn't get the role was because I had, I can't remember what the term was. But there we go. Fixed mindset to some degree. So it was one of the beliefs, and it's changed now. But you know, for example, are leaders born or made? And my mindset was, yeah, man, they're just made. But I didn't really believe that. In essence, the truth was, I believe that most leaders were born, and like some people had a more genetic predisposition to leaders than others. When the real like growth mindset would say like, hey, some people may be born with a genetic predisposition to be better at like task A or task B, but with like work ethic and focus, anybody can get to that level of expertise. And that's like where I'm at now. And that just helped me change how I just framed a lot of things in life going forwards.
Damn, I see you.
Yes, so I'd recommend that.
Yeah, a lot of things is mindset. And it's the same with anything, even with training. I tell them as well, like, you know, being motivated is not the same as being disciplined. You know, you're only motivated for a day, two, a week, a month at most, but you can't be motivated for an entire year. You have to be disciplined.
I wrote a whole article about this, and I came to the conclusion that discipline is so much more important than motivation.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you were to like rank the two, like discipline versus motivation, out of the way, because discipline is just doing those things on a day-to-day basis, and eventually, like after 21 days, they become a habit, so it's easy to do. Motivation, as you said before, because it's like, hey man, I feel motivated to work out today, so I'm gonna work out today, and tomorrow I kind of feel, you know, a little bit less motivated, so I won't. It's about discipline to work every day, irrespective of how my emotions are. I'm gonna work out. I'm gonna make time to do what I need to do to get where I want. And I think like discipline is just so much more important just to get whatever you want from life.
Sustainable.
Mm.
Sustainable.
And it does like flicker. It does like fleet and grow. Like sometimes if you were to equate like discipline to a flame, sometimes it's a roaring flame inside of you. And sometimes it's a small ember. Again, like like your mindset kind of correlates to like how large that discipline inside you, how bad you want it really. That's really it. So, man, we went on topics I didn't think we were going to discuss. So thank you so much. So I think I'd like to leave it with one last question. So in most cases, everyone in life talks about like it on social media and just in general, their accomplishments, like what great things they've done, you know, all their accolades and things of that nature. And I think, you know, seeing those accolades is like seeing the top of a volcano. However, the most important element of the volcano is what you don't see, what goes on underneath. So I'd love for you to share maybe one or two things, maybe recently, maybe in your life that you failed at, that you think failing at these past activities has put you in a position to where you are now.
Something I've failed at. Let me think. This is something I'm guilty for. I'm not taking time because I haven't failed at anything. I've failed at a lot of things, but I try to downplay a lot of them in my mind, at least.
You're going to tell me that you're Mayweather out here, undefeated.
No. Trust me, defeated many times. Stood up one more. One thing I failed at was, I think this might sound a bit deep, but I've failed at maintaining, because I've moved around a lot of places. Mm-hmm. I think I personally failed at maintaining, nurturing some of the relationships I had built in the past, like with some of the people that I had met.
Yeah, man.
But look at us now, pouring water on our. But yeah, I think I've failed at that with certain people. But during this lockdown period, I've thankfully come to my senses, and just reconnecting with some old friends. You know, there was no fallouts between us. There was just, you know, a cease in conversing, I guess. But thankfully, during this lockdown, began to talk to some of them, and what I'm finding out is a lot of these people are doing cool things in spaces that in or around spaces that I want to be working in as well. You know, I linked up with this old friend of mine, and he lives in Canada, and we haven't spoken in like 5-6 years. And I found out that he's has a startup, a tech startup, where they build applications for different industries. But he's telling me about the gigs that he has within the fitness industry. And I'm thinking, well, shit, man, if I knew that you were doing this, you know, let's do something together, you know. Just things of those sort, just reconnecting with old people. I think I did a poor job in staying in touch with a lot of friends. I guess I didn't realize it at the time because my life was very one thing to the next.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that this lockdown is a blessing in disguise. I say it to a lot of people. I don't think the actual disease is a blessing. I think the disease is a curse. But there's a silver lining to the situation that it's put us in. You know what I mean?
What I've been doing recently has just been FaceTiming people. So as you said before, it's people who, I don't know, man, you just stop speaking to for no real reason. Yeah. No fallouts, just life kind of gone away. Like, I'm a terrible reply for the most time. So, like, we might be going through a crazy back and forth chat, and then I might forget to reply. And then if you message me on iMessage, I do them while talking on WhatsApp. So I'm looking, anyway, just FaceTime people. And it's like, oh, wow, as you mentioned before, people are doing such cool shit. And it's, and again, like, that FaceTime is people just, again, in my experience, I don't know, maybe you might FaceTime people and they hang up on you, but people just love a good FaceTime. And people just, like, most people are in a similar situation where this lockdown is, you know, it's fun, great opportunity to, like, develop, learn new skill sets. But again, we're humans. We crave, we need that human connection. And, you know, I think, like, a phone call is great, but, you know, in this current situation, face-to-face video call is as close as we can get to that. I think really people really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So that being said, guys, I mean, the takeaway, closing message is to FaceTime your ex-girlfriends, FaceTime all your friends, just FaceTime everybody, man.
Definitely FaceTime your ex-girlfriends. They'd love that. Yeah. All the ex-girlfriends are sitting home by themselves right now.
And let us know how that goes, guys. Ladies, too. Ex-girlfriends as well. We don't discriminate here. Very curious. Leave some feedback as to how that goes. So I'd love to maybe start a nice thread on Twitter about how that experience went. That'd be quite interesting. Provide some comedy in this current time. Anyway, man, thank you so much for your time. Any closing remarks? Any shout-outs?
Oh, man, this has been awesome. This is actually my first ever podcast. So, thank you very much for having me on here, man. And I hope to do this again in the near future.
For sure, man. Thank you so much. Take care. Wow. Thank you for taking some time to listen to all of that. I really appreciate it. Feedback makes the world go round. So what I'd like for you to do is please give us a follow on Instagram, bedroom2b. That's our socials. Please give me some feedback as to how we can improve. Alternatively, message me on LinkedIn. So AJ, surname is Alpha Lima, Alpha Oscar. Feedback makes the world go round. So I'm eagerly anticipating how we can make the next few episodes much better. Again, thank you so much for listening and stay tuned for the next episode.